The gripping tale of the West End Christian School hostage crisis has long lingered in the minds of those who endured it. It was Groundhog Day, February the 2nd, 1988, when the tranquility of Tuscaloosa, Alabama was shattered when James L. Harvey seized control of the now defunct West End Christian School, holding some 110 innocent lives, predominantly children, in his grip. But the tension escalated until a daring gambit by Alabama Governor H. Guy Hunt, who offered a glimmer of hope, promising Harvey a pardon and immunity via videotape. But however, as events unfolded, the promise was revealed to be a clever ruse to secure the hostage's release. This is the unbelievable story of the harrowing events leading to Harvey's dramatic arrest and the aftermath of this unforgettable ordeal. It all began around 8:40 a.m. when two masked men, one later identified as James L. Harvey, stormed into the West End Christian School. The morning of the standoff, Harvey had stolen several guns from his nephew and then headed to the unemployment office where he offered John Rhodes $300 to supposedly help him move some furniture. But according to police, Harvey forced Rhodes to wear a ski mask, carry a gun, and accompany him into the school. Now, West End was a private school, which is now defunct, and it provided kindergarten through the 12th grade. It was all white and located in a predominantly black downtown neighborhood. The elementary classes, grades 1 through 6, were housed in a separate building in the school's educational complex. Their mission was to draw attention to the plight of homeless and hungry and demanding to speak with high-ranking officials. That mission is what led them to that school that morning. Now, students in Mary Alice Blanton's third grade class were collecting lunch money. Judy Dunn's class across the hall was getting ready for Bible study lesson, but the routine school day wouldn't last very long. It was a day none of them will ever forget, and by the time it was over, the nation's eyes would be turned to Tuscaloosa. Several of the teachers and children who experienced the day-long ordeal remember first hearing a scream in the hallway. It was Blanton who encountered Harvey as he approached her classroom. She hit him with a book of Bible stories before he grabbed her. Teacher Shirley Williamson was also across the hall. "The children froze in their seats," she said. When I saw him, the adrenaline rushed through my body. He twisted Miss Blanton's arm behind her back, and she said, "This is for real. Get the police." But for Whit Jordan, February the 2nd, 1988, started off just like any other school day. But Whit didn't realize that it would soon change. He said a student came into his classroom telling the teacher, Miss Blanton, that someone wanted to see her, so she stepped outside. "All of a sudden, we hear Miss Blanton yelling outside. We didn't know what was going on," said Jordan. "That was when James Harvey, strapped with a machine gun and another man, burst into his classroom and proceeded to tie up Miss Blanton." She said, "Do exactly what they tell you to do." He said that Harvey addressed the terrified students, telling them why he was doing all of this, and that he was concerned with the treatment of homeless veterans. But by now, many of the students were crying. Angie Hannah Harris was in Blanton's classroom, which Harvey made his headquarters for the duration of the 12-hour standoff. She said he put a machine gun to the teacher's head and told them that he could kill all of them by shooting them in 3.2 seconds. No one expected that this Groundhog Day would become Tuscaloosa's "I never thought it could happen here" moment. Listening to true crime podcasts can make you question your safety and security. And what better way to protect yourself than with a safe room? And why stop there? Make your entire house a safe space from serial killers and zombies and tornadoes and hurricanes. You see, insulated concrete form homes built with Nadura not only offer great curb appeal, but are comfortable and strong and safe year-round. ICF foam block construction offers superior energy efficiency, occupant comfort, sound dampering, fire resistance, and disaster resilience for the life of your home. And for those of you in North Alabama, North Mississippi, and Southern Tennessee, it is simple as emailing our good friend Carlos at BC3 ICF Distributor, LLC. Located in Phil Campbell, Alabama, Carlos has everything you need to build a fortified home at a fraction of the cost of a traditional build. For more information about how Nadura ICF can provide you safety and security, email bc3.naduraicfdistributor@yahoo.com. According to teacher Mary Alice Blanton, who was teaching her 23 third graders at a Bible lesson that morning when Harvey summoned her into the hallway, she said it was pouring down rain. But with Bible in hand, she said that, he had the Magnum gun pointed at my hand and pointed at me, she said. I said, you cannot go in the classroom with my children. But he defied her order and went that way anyways. She said, I raised the book up and hit the gun downward, and then he ran across the hall and he kicked the door down. But even in this moment of terror, Ms. Blanton said that faith ensured her that she had the strength to preserve in such a trying time. I had no doubt we were going to make it out of here, she said. I don't know why I thought that, but I did. I went around each child and I put my hands over them and I prayed. And when help finally came, Blanton said she remembers Harvey offering to let her go. But Ms. Blanton defied his order, his request for her to go. She said, I'm not leaving here without my children. Harvey is a 42-year-old unemployed man and Vietnam veteran who apparently is obsessed with television news, addicted to CNN and C-SPAN, from which he had developed vaguely anti-government sentiments. His demands were similarly vague. You know, at one point, he wanted a negotiator to arrange appearances on the Donahue television show and on Late Night with David Letterman. And another demand, he requested $2 million in a Winnebago in which he was going to make a getaway. Whit Jordan said, I didn't know what to do or think. This guy is in here with guns, and I know it's a bad situation, but I don't know what to do. He said the students gathered in a little circle as negotiators in the classroom at this point tried to reason with Harvey. Those negotiations were tense with intermittent talks throughout the day, but Harvey would release some hostages in exchange for concessions while others remained captive and their fate uncertain. Parents anxiously waited on bleachers, their emotions running high as they hoped for the safe return of their children. And as the rainy day wore on, the scene around the school, which now houses the Phoenix House, an addiction treatment facility, grew intense. Many parents showed up, crowding the mostly residential streets in the area. Some of them were armed, and most of them were directed to the school gymnasium to await word on the fate of their children. Retired Tuscaloosa Police Chief Ken Swindle, who was then the assistant chief, handled much of the negotiations. Swindle said that he had these demands, And he remembered a story. That was about 5 years beforehand. It wasn't about making a political statement. He just sat and he watched television so much. He just got so wrapped up in everything. I think he saw himself as being a hero when this was over. Dan Cates and Bill Castle had just pulled into the parking lot at the Tuscaloosa County Courthouse when their police scanner indicated problems at a nearby private school. Cates, who was a reporter at the time for the Birmingham-based television station, and Castle was his cameraman, a team that suddenly wound up in the national spotlight. The two were at the courthouse to cover a high-profile murder trial, but quickly shelved that for something much more important. In a matter of a few minutes, Cates would have become part of a negotiating team pleading with gunmen to free dozens of elementary school students and several of their teachers. Brandishing several weapons, James Harvey, who enjoyed watching television all day, especially when Cates was reporting the news. It was this Harvey that was upset with the world, it seemed. And he wasn't playing any games. Not with pistols or the automatic rifle and 2,000 rounds of ammunition in his possession. Police had sent in pizza and burgers and a television because Harvey wanted to see what was going on outside. He demanded to speak with a member of the media. And that's when Cates was recruited to enter the building. Now, the police told Cates that he didn't have to see Harvey, but he volunteered to do what he could to ease what could potentially become a lethal situation. He said, "At that point, I decided that I'm a person first and a journalist second, and that I would do anything I could to help those kids out of there," he said. I didn't hesitate. Did I cross the line as a journalist? Well, maybe so. But as a person, my instincts were to help those children, and, well, that outweighed everything else. And thus began a 12-hour hostage ordeal with Cates running back and forth from a safe zone into the building where frightened third graders were being held at gunpoint and their teacher taped to a chair in the room. Meanwhile, the 84 children trapped in the building were making do. They were sharing lunches that some students had brought, and they used trash cans for toilets, and they prayed. Police gave Cates a bulletproof vest to wear along with suggestions on how to handle himself inside the building. When he wasn't letting Harvey use him as a sounding board to vent his anger and frustration, Cates stopped long enough outside to apprise reporters about what was happening inside the school. Cates, a Troy University graduate and relative rookie in the world of television broadcasting, had become part of the story, which was beaming across the country. And then there was Hoyt Harwell, a veteran Associated Press reporter who arrived not long after Cates and Castle began putting their first report together. Cates and Harwell worked opposite ends of the journalistic spectrum, spending part of the day meeting with Harvey, then rushing to a safe area to inform other reporters before filing their own stories. The AP reporter Hoyt Harwell of Birmingham described Harvey as a tall, thin man in his 40s, with a graying beard. He was wearing a visored cap and held a rifle in his right hand, Harwell told reporters after his meeting with the gunman. Harwell also said that the gunman told him that he was willing to die and had put my life on the line to dramatize the plight of the homeless and the hungry. "If I can't accomplish anything any other way, I can do it this way," Harwell quoted the gunman as saying. "Maybe I can wake people up and get them to understand that things are awfully wrong. People on the street don't have any place to sleep or anything to eat. Things are awfully wrong and nobody's doing anything about it." Harwell said Harvey refused to give his name to him, saying, "My name is not important." The gunman also described the takeover as a political act, not a criminal act. The reporter said he spoke to the gunman in the hallway of the elementary school outside the third grade classroom door. The door to the fourth grade, about 10 steps down the hall, was closed, Harwell said. He said that Harvey described his weapon as a .223 rifle, similar to an M16, and made in Israel. He said the gunman held the rifle at an angle over the reporter's head as the two talked. With all the drama that was taking place in the school that day, and, well, with a lot of the attention being on the reporters who were negotiating on behalf of the students, and the families trying to get them out of the school, there was an unsung hero. And it was Tuscaloosa defense attorney Bob Prince, who quickly responded to the scene when negotiations saw Harvey demand the best attorney in the city. Now, Prince said that over the years, people had been under the impression that he represented Harvey or was disloyal to the kidnapper as his client in the aftermath of the standoff. But he's quick to point out that he was summoned under duress and simply answered the call, and that he never represented him in the aftermath. According to Prince, Harvey had called the Tuscaloosa City Attorney's Office to ask for the best attorney in town, only to turn down the first option provided because they were a politician. But when Prince's name came up, Harvey agreed. "I go out there and he wanted me to bring a copy of the Constitution, which I did," Prince told the news at the time. "When I got out there, I took it to him in a book, and he wanted the mayor for some reason, but I walked over there to where he was, and I'll just tell you, he looked frightening. He was wearing sunglasses, so you couldn't see his eyes, and his cap was pulled down, and his face was covered, and he was holding what would amount to an AR-15 repeating rifle with a clip in it. And here I am wondering what I'd gotten myself into." As a kind of trusted neutral party, however, Prince made headway in earning Harvey's trust over the course of their first half hour together, which saw Harvey stand in the door of the elementary classroom while Prince stood in the hall. This one particular classroom became the focus, Prince recalled, as Swindle and others were able to get numerous students and one pregnant teacher out of the building after they had taken shelter in adjacent classrooms. "We can't control them in that room with Harvey, but we actually got a lot of folks released, and then the state sent their hostage negotiator there, and his idea was to frustrate him, which I didn't think was very smart, considering he was starting to trust us," Prince said. "He wanted food, and they didn't want to bring it to him." He also said he had been training himself to go a long time without using the bathroom. By now, reporters from across the country had set up shop at the school to report the latest news while trying to stay dry during intermittent thunderstorms. It was like a scene out of a movie as we watched Cates and Harwell run back and forth at West End Christian School. In addition to Harvey's complaints about homelessness, too many lawyers in Washington and revolutionaries in Latin America, he also wanted immunity from prosecution. But it wouldn't be long before Harvey would let his poor, unsuspecting assistant, John Rhodes Jr., surrender. But back to Bob Prince. His legal career has been a legendary one, and fearlessness is a trait that no doubt goes into many of the situations he's encountered. But around 2 p.m. that day in 1988, he truly began to feel scared. The governor was stalling on the pardon at this point that Harvey had requested, and Harvey had Prince in the hall, and he was in the doorway, and he said, "They don't think I'm serious. I should show them I'm serious," Prince recalled. As worries began to mount that Harvey might be willing to gun down the young lawyer, or worse, turn the gun on the classroom to get his point across to the world outside. But as luck would have it, Harvey first released more than 40 of his hostages about 2 p.m. The children taken hostage were members of the 1st, 3rd, 4th, and 5th grades at the school, authorities said. They said that the 2nd grade class had managed to escape after their teacher grew suspicious during the break-in and led them to safety. The 6th grade class was away from the school on a field trip. The children first released were in the 1st and 5th grades. Then around 3:30 p.m., he released 9 more in exchange for a chance to talk with an Associated Press reporter. He also released one of the 2 teachers he held, Miss Judy Dunn, who taught the 4th grade and was an expectant mother. At around 6 p.m., 2 more groups of students were freed, leaving the final group of students and 1 teacher, Mary Alice Blanton, still in captivity. As soon as the hostage situation became apparent, then Governor Guy Hun was notified and became another player in what seemed to be an unfolding drama. Governor Hunt had sent Press Secretary Terry Abbott to Tuscaloosa to find out the specifics and then began conferring with his top aides about what he needs to do with Harvey. They soon contrived a plan to offer the gunman immunity as well as a pardon if that didn't satisfy him. Now, the governor was told that he had no such authority, but felt that the ploy might just work. So Governor Hunt made a 10-minute audio tape telling Harvey he would see him only if he put his weapons down and released the children. Well, the plan began to work. And Cates once again found himself in the middle of the latest developments. Negotiators, including the 2 reporters, talked intermittently with the remaining gunmen through a classroom door. Assistant Chief Swindell recalled one point where he learned that Harvey had explained to a small child the exact physical details of what would happen to their body if he shot them in the chest with a semi-automatic rifle. A small entry wound and a large, gruesome exit wound. As the day went on and we negotiated with him, I built trust with him and I got him to believe in more things I was doing and would do and how he would respond to me, Swindell said of his tactics that day. We would swap pizza for kids, a TV for kids, and we just established a rapport as the day went on. Bravery was displayed in abundance by the assistant chief and others that day, but it was worth noting that the seasoned lawman was careful not to make the situation worse or compromise the trust that he had slowly built with Harvey. Now, Harvey had said he would release the hostages once the videotape of Hunt signing a pardon for him was delivered. Jeremy Roan, a 4th grader whose father is the assistant headmaster, said the tape showed the governor saying that he pardoned this guy. He signed a paper and said, "This is the paper that pardons you." He held it up to the camera and put it back on his desk. It lasted about a minute. Harvey started freeing the children a few at a time, and Cates became an escort, helping boys and girls to rejoin their families in the school's gymnasium. "My role was mainly to listen to Harvey," said Cates. "Just so thankful that it ended without any gunfire or injuries." After a grueling 12-hour standoff, Harvey's surrender came unexpectedly. Faced with a promise of pardon and immunity from Governor Guy Hunt, Harvey believed he was heading to a news conference. But as he emerged from the school, the dark reality of betrayal descended upon him, and law enforcement swiftly moved to apprehend him. The only reason he eventually came out was he thought he was going to get a book deal or go on Jay Leno and talk shows, Swindell said. He was extremely political in his motives. And even though he was jumping around and carrying on, at one point he asked if I was Republican or Democrat, so you had to watch what you answered so as not to set him off. I told him I like some Republicans, and I like some Democrats, but I'm for the person first. And he seemed to like that answer. Clad in a white dress shirt and red necktie, the assistant chief sported an intimidating frame at 6'4". And along with the help of another officer, he slammed Harvey to the ground as cameras rolled to capture the moment. Harvey would be charged with 110 counts of kidnapping that day and sent to a state mental facility for psychiatric tests. His bond was set at $8.4 million, as well as for his accomplice, John Rhodes Jr., who was taken to Taylor Hardin Secure Medical Facility. Rhodes was kept at the Tuscaloosa County Jail. Now, Rhodes would be freed just a few days later as a federal judge decided that, well, he was there under duress. And at trial, Harvey opted to represent himself and ultimately pled guilty before a jury was able to deliberate on the charges. He was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. Well, as for the 110 counts of kidnapping, it was reduced to a grand total of 6. And as for that possibility of no parole, it went back on the books, and now he gets a parole hearing about every 5 years. James Harvey never made clear as to why he chose the now closed private school in West Tuscaloosa as a target. We just know he was angry about national issues and wanted his voice to be heard. He's been up for parole several times and was denied parole again in 2023. James Harvey will be eligible for parole again in 2028. But as the dust settled, the community grappled with the aftermath of the crisis. Parents embraced their children, grateful for their safe return, while authorities worked to understand the motives behind the siege. And for a while, the West End Christian School, once a scene of chaos, stood as a symbol of resilience and unity in the face of adversity. Until next time, I'll see you then.